The small group of riders left Paravon early the next day, just as the first gleam of pre-dawn began to glow above the peaks of the Grey Mountains. By nightfall, they had camped in a break in the woods that clothed the base of the trees. Running a cold camp, the bounty hunter had not allowed any fires. The encampment was a tense place, made all the more so by the distrust and rivalry festering in the hearts of the members of the small band. Malinbois loathed and despised Sir Lutriel, who in turn was quite open about his own suspicions about Litheline, who he believed would betray them to seek his own separate vengeance. Ferrex was in obvious terror of the Black Prince. He started at every shadow, terrified that the evil creature's reach would find them. The wiry thief was also in obvious terror of both Brunner and Sir Lutriel, as fearful of the two men as he was of the brigand lord he was betraying. And Joseph, too, harbored his own suspicions, wondering if he could trust the bounty hunter. Only the writer, Erhard Stoecker, seemed without prejudice. He flitted from one person to the other, engaging each in conversation. Joseph wondered if this was why the bounty hunter had allowed a man to accompany them, not to indulge Stoecker's desire to have some grand adventure of his own, but to keep the bounty killer's company from cutting each other's throats. Eventually, Stoecker finished his circuit of the camp and seated himself beside Joseph. The young merchant looked over at the writer. Stoecker must have noticed the boy's glance, for he smiled and asked what was on Joseph's mind. "I can understand why everyone is here, except for the elf," the youth confessed. "Ferrex and Malinbois are being driven by their fear of the hangman or Brunner. Sir Lutriel wants a share of the bounty. You are here to experience one of the adventures you write about. But why is Litheline with us?" Stoecker smiled, nodding toward the elf, making his way into the trees to take his position for the long night watch. "I've spoken with him before, a few years ago in Miragliano." "Miragliano?" the youth asked. "Why would a wood elf be in a Tylian port?" "The same reason he is here now. The same reason you are here. He is looking for vengeance." Stoecker noted the start Joseph gave as he heard the declaration. "You see, many years ago, centuries actually, the wood elf sent an envoy to the King of Bretonia, but she never returned to Athel Lorraine. She was ambushed, her retainers and guards killed by the Black Prince. For 100 years, searched for the envoy, but all he could discover were rumors and legends about a shadowy bandit king. Then, one day, as he followed yet another lead, he met a rider on the road. The rider was silent and wore a silk robe that clothed her from head to foot. As he drew nearer, the smell of death struck his nose, and a buzz of flies sounded in his ears. The rider was a corpse, lashed to a saddle. A wooden frame held it upright. As Litheline looked closer, he saw that the corpse was that of the missing envoy, and it was only hours old. I will not mention the atrocities that sorry body bore witness to, but cut into the flesh were savage, twisted elf runes, runes that spelled out a simple message. Compliments of the Black Prince." Stoecker fixed Joseph with a stern, saddened gaze. "The envoy was his sister." Joseph stared up at the tree the elf had climbed into with a sudden understanding in his eyes. He might not be certain about whether Brunner would cheat him of his revenge, but he could be certain that nothing would keep the elf from killing the Black Prince with his own hands. Joseph knew this because the same determination filled up his own heart. Joseph awoke with a start. A clammy hand clamped across his mouth. He stared up into the face of Sir Lutriel.
"Don't make a sound, or we are undone,"
the knight's calm voice whispered. He removed his hand. Joseph sat up, seeing that the knight was fully dressed, his sword sheathed at his side. "What's this about?" the youth asked. The knight gave him a knowing, superior look.
Tell me, do you honestly think that you have any chance of getting what you want if you stick with Brunner?
Sir Lutriel replied.
Do you honestly think that the elf is going to let you cheat him of his vengeance? Or do you think that Brunner is actually going to allow you to jeopardize his chance of collecting the bounty on the Black Prince's head?
A bounty which you want for yourself, Joseph observed.
Naturally, the knight admitted, but I am rather loath to share it.
What do you intend? The merchant asked, his mind racing, trying to see where the Bretonian was leading him.
I've had a most illuminating discussion with our friend Ferrex, Sir Lutriel confessed. He told me about an old goblin tunnel that burrows its way into the Black Prince's stronghold, a tunnel that is never used and never guarded. He also told me how to find a valley where the Black Prince's stronghold is hidden. It might be possible for two determined men to make their way in and collect that valuable head.
The knight smiled.
Actually, Ferrex came to me with the idea. It seems he is inordinately fond of the idea that the Black Prince might already be dead when Brunner drags his sorry hide back there. In fact, he even said that he would keep the bounty hunter riding in circles for a few days to give us enough time to kill his former master and be away before Brunner can do anything about it.
Why me? Joseph wondered, suspicions rising in his mind.
Why not do it yourself? I need someone to watch my back. I have no idea what risks might be involved. I need an accomplice.
Sir Lutriel's voice dropped even lower.
And you are the only one I can trust. The others are too connected to Brunner, and if I take Ferrex, I lose my decoy. Brunner would be after me like a shot in that event.
The knight paused, studying Joseph's reaction to his words.
It is the only way you will get your chance at the murderer of your father, he said.
You will let me face the Black Prince? There was a note of disbelief in Joseph's voice.
Oh, by all means, and when he kills you, there will be no one to share the reward with,
the knight admitted, his voice as friendly and superior as ever. Joseph considered the brutal honesty of the statement.
Very well, the youth said. Give me a moment to gather my things.
Joseph and the knight made their way down the narrow path, careful not to dislodge any of the jagged stones that lined it. It was a secret way into the small valley where the Black Prince had made his stronghold, a way supposedly known only to Bors and Ferrex, though Sir Lutriel had expressed his doubts, and had kept his sword ready. It was not only men that served the Dark Elf, and the knight knew enough about beastmen to know that if their minds were less than human, their senses were more than human. The path had started in a grove of tangled trees, then climbed up the side of a hidden, narrow ravine that laced through the grey mountains. On one side, the narrow path was bordered by soaring dark cliffs. On the other, it dropped away into a deep chasm. The surface of the trail was damp and slippery, forcing the two travelers to move very slowly, lest they lose their footing and tumble to their death on the jagged rocks below. It was a highly defensible route, and Sir Lutriel did not doubt that it would indeed take an army to force their way into the valley should its inhabitants be aware of their approach. But Sir Lutriel had never been one to take the direct approach, when a knife in the back or a loose saddle strap might serve his purpose just as well. They had left the horses, hobbled in the small grove of trees, where the Bretonian hoped they would not be discovered, and had then set up the winding trail that Ferrex had described. They climbed the grey rock of the mountain, at times nearly vertical with the face of the grim rock, then descended by a treacherous path to the valley floor. The valley itself was small, but again proved perfect for the purposes of the bandit lord. A small stream ran down from the mountains, rolling across the rocky, barren ground, before plummeting down the deep gash that snaked its way across the valley floor. The narrow crack was decidedly unnatural in appearance, much like the runnels cut into the valley floor. But where the runnels showed the remains of ancient trenches and earthworks, the crack was an altogether different sort of scar, left by a long-forgotten battle. The crack started at the opposite side of the valley, in the shadow of the mountain, and ran almost to the valley's center. The crack was the very last vestige of an ancient tunnel dwarf sappers had blasted in an effort to reach the stronghold of their enemy, before the unnatural words and defenses of their foes had caused the tunnel to collapse and crumble into the caverns under the gray mountains. The collapsed dwarf tunnel had left behind a long jagged cut 20 feet wide and hundreds deep. Rising from the center of the barren valley was a slender round tower of white stone. Fluted buttresses supported the crown of the tower, where a tiled roof enclosed the upper parapet. Several balconies opened out from the sides of the tower at varying heights, each edged by triangular crenellations that added to the symmetry of the structure. In places, the stone was chipped or fractured, but it was still an imposing and fabulous sight, a relic of the days the elf rule over the old world, before the War of the Beard had caused them to abandon their colonies and withdraw back to the enchanted shores of Ulthuan. Neither of the men who gazed upon the tower for the first time could guess how many battles it had seen unfold, nor could they fathom the deep satisfaction its present occupant drew from claiming such a relic of his cousin's for his own. As they observed the tower, a pair of gangly, man-sized creatures silently circled the spire on grotesque bat-like wings. It was difficult to make out any detail at such a distance, and neither of the men desired a closer look than their current position allowed. Sir Lutriel pulled Joseph close, motioning with his hands how they would next proceed. Ferrex had told them of an underground passage, a tunnel built by the goblins during their infestation of the tower that wormed its way from the mountainside to the stronghold. He did not know if the Black Prince knew of its existence, but Ferrex was certain that his former master had not put the old tunnel to any use. There might be other secret ways into the tower, but this was the only one that Ferrex had ever learned of. The knight and the merchant made their way carefully across the open expanse, casting fearful glances at the tower, wary of any sign of watching sentries. The ground they had to cover between the trail and the opening of the old goblin hole was not far, but it was the most dangerous. Both men sighed with relief when they gained the cover of a cluster of rocks. Between a pair of massive boulders, the dark gaping mouth of the goblin tunnel beckoned to the men. The opening itself was tight, and Sir Lutriel found himself obliged to squirm his way between the rocks, not daring to fill his lungs as he slithered through the tight passage. The tunnel itself was an equally miserable experience, a low-ceilinged affair with an uneven floor and frequent disorientating changes in pitch and direction. The men had to bend double with their backs parallel to the ground, their swords held out before them. Joseph lit a small torch he had brought with him to illuminate the jagged passageway. Old bones, the last remnants of the original inhabitants, were crunched into powder beneath their boots. After what seemed an eternity in the clammy dark silence of the tunnel, the ceiling suddenly grew much higher, and the men could stand upright. The tunnel had opened into some sort of chamber. Joseph could see that a great pile of goblin bones rested against one wall, while the other opened into a deep sloping passage. The remaining wall was remarkable as well, for it was smooth, molded by skilled hands rather than gouged from the living earth. Joseph looked at Sir Lutriel. The knight nodded, dropping the face of his helmet down and firming his grip on the hilt of his sword. Joseph set the torch down and began to rub his hand across the smooth surface of the wall. Down near the bottom, his palm encountered a slight spur, a blemish in the face of the wall. There was a faint, barely perceivable click, and a section of the wall slid outward.
"Remember, he is mine,"
Joseph whispered, then stepped through the opening. He could see that a door had opened upon a hall, its walls, ceiling, and floor crafted from the same smooth white stone. As he took in his surroundings, a bright flash of light exploded before his eyes. Stunned, the youth was unprepared when a clutching hand tore the sword from his hand. Joseph could hear a Bretonian curse, and guessed that Sir Lutriel had also been captured and disarmed. Burly limbs wrapped themselves about Joseph's arms, and the boy was savagely pulled into the center of the hallway.
"It seems I have visitors,"
a melodious voice purred. Joseph found himself staring into an inhumanly handsome face. It was not unlike the visage of Lifeline in many ways, but to call them identical was to call a swarthy-visaged Arabian a pale Kislevite nomad. The paleness of the speaker's skin was more marked, it was more pallid than the creamy hue of the wood elf. There was a harsh cruelty about this elf's features, a stamp of wickedness that tainted the fine sharp lines with menace. His hooded eyes regarded Joseph and Sir Lutriel with an almost bored expression. Joseph let his gaze fall from the elf's face, staring as he saw the black armor, the twin swords, and the long dangling length of steel and silk skirts. He had not seen the face of his father's murderer before, but he recognized the garb of the Black Prince. Rage surged through his lean frame, and the boy struggled against the grip holding his arms. But the powerful hold could not be broken. The elf smiled, drawing his thin lips tight. He idly flicked a lock of long black hair from his face.
"Whatever shall I do with my delicious guests? It is so seldom that I am called upon to entertain."
Coarse laughter echoed in the Black Prince's words, and Joseph became aware that there were others with him. Hard-faced men, wearing all manner of motley armor, filled the corridor behind the bandit lord. Two more elves, their faces mirroring their master's, their armor fashioned to echo and mimic that of the Black Prince, flanked the dread figure. Their own beautiful faces were twisted into sneers of sadistic amusement. Other figures, twisted and inhuman, loomed above the elves and men, or slithered their warped shapes between the bandits to get a better view of the prisoners.
"Oh, but look!"
the elf exclaimed with mock astonishment.
"One of my guests brought me a gift."
The Black Prince's thin hand reached to Joseph's belt, nimbly plucking the covered dagger from him. The elf held the dagger beneath his nose and closed his eyes as he savored the smell of the Nagaroth steel.
"I much regretted the loss of this dagger," he said. "It is an heirloom of my family, and there are few enough of those left to me in these less prosperous times. I thank you for its return."
"The lady's curse be on you," roared Sir Lutriel, struggling to free himself from the embrace of the hulking beastmen that held him fast.
The Black Prince turned and faced the Bretonian.
"The lady?"
the dark elf asked. Then his eyes widened as if with sudden recollection.
"Ah, yes, that heathen deity you animals pray to. Truly, can you do no better? I have borne curses bestowed in her name for centuries now. Now I ask you, even for a god, don't you think that is a bit slow to act?"
"Damn you," Sir Lutriel snarled. "Give me a sword and I'll cut that smirk from your face."
The Black Prince laughed. "I fear that such a contest would be quite dreary. I faced your sort before, even your masters. In Nagaroth, they would not have even been allowed to cross swords with a cripple." The knight roared anew at the villain's mockery, but the Black Prince had already turned his back on the man.
"Do not fear. I shall arrange for you to show me just how skilled you are with your sword.
We will be avenged! My father will be avenged!
Cried Joseph, as the Black Prince began to withdraw into the shadows, along with his retinue. The elf paused, considering the boy again, with his disdainful face.
Surely you do not mean the bounty hunter and his comrades?
The Black Prince laughed. He watched with amusement, as the rage on the boy's features faded into shock.
Oh, yes!
The elf's voice sank into a soothing whisper.
I know all about them.
In fact, I was just going to arrange a proper welcome for them. The reptilian smile returned to the monster's face.
It is so rare for me to receive visitors.
He looked at the beastman holding the two prisoners.
Take the boy to my audience chamber.
He pointed a slender finger at Sir Lutriel.
Take that to the pit, and prepare it for this evening's festivities.
The Black Prince did not pause to watch the beastmen drag their burdens away, but regarded his two attentive lieutenants. The elves bowed their heads as the Black Prince stared at them.
Dranak, Urythen, attend me. There are things we must discuss before my other guests arrive.
He walked away, the two dark elves following a respectful 10 steps behind their master. The Black Prince stood at the gate of the tower, once again armored for battle. He was flanked by Lieutenant Dranak and the hulking hound-faced beastman Urgmesh. Before him, mounted on a coal-black steed, the other Dark Elf lieutenant stared down at his master. Like the Black Prince, he was garbed for battle, his fine, sharp features staring out from the open face of his helmet. Behind him, a dozen grizzled horsemen awaited his command.
Hunt down these swine, and bring him and his companions back to me, alive!
The Black Prince's melodious voice intoned from behind the mask of his helm.
I have already dispatched the harpies to watch the mountains, lest the worm thinks to deceive us by taking the more difficult road. But I think it most likely that he will try the pass.
And if they should elude us? The lieutenant asked.
We keep a watch here.
The Black Prince gestured with a slender, mail-clad finger, pointing above his head.
I shall post watchmen above, to warn us should our visitors approach the tower, and keep a force below to greet them should they use the tunnel.
I think you should find a single sentry of more service, the lieutenant offered. A single watcher might go unseen and unnoticed. One sentinel with keen eyes would be more certain to carry warning than a dozen, who would surely be seen before the bounty hunter came out from cover.
The lieutenant grew quiet, then spoke again.
Perhaps Gruzlok, his eyes are the best of all your beastmen.
He's also simple, the Black Prince scoffed. A dog would be hard-pressed to maintain a discourse with Gruzlok.
It takes no great wit to detect a company of riders approaching the tower, observed the lieutenant, and his phenomenal vision may prove of great benefit.
The Black Prince nodded his armored head.
Quite so, he said. I shall act upon your suggestion.
The elf waved his hand in a dismissive gesture. The mounted lieutenant looked over at his men, inclining his head, and motioned for them to follow him. The line of riders galloped from the tower to the narrow floor of the valley. The Black Prince watched them for a moment, then faced Dranak.
Come, let us see how our guests are faring, he said.
The two Dark Elves withdrew back into the tower, the gate closing behind them. The Black Prince smiled. Things were proceeding just as the Eye of Char had revealed. Very soon now, the events he had allowed to unfold would speed to the conclusion he had seen. The harpies, if the miserable, gruesome chaos beasts he had secured from a traveling menagerie could honestly be allowed to bear the name, would nestle among the crags of the Grey Mountains to await his command to return. He had not seen them in the Eye of Char, so he did not want them close by when his present scheme came to fruition. As for his lieutenants, well, they were another matter. The Black Prince entered the great hall of the tower, striding past the bowed heads of the bandit soldiers and misshapen beastmen, not sparing a glance at any of his servants. Dranach and the beastman Urgmesh followed at his heels. The bandit leader walked to a low dais set before a great gaping pit. With measured strides, he climbed the steps, seating himself on the high-backed seat that was a copy of the chair in his throne room. The elf considered the fiery gaze directed at him by the young boy chained at the foot of the dais, by a large dog collar fixed about his neck. The Black Prince chuckled as he felt Joseph's hate wash over him. "In good time," the bandit lord said. "But first, you should enjoy the hospitality of the Black Prince." The elf laughed again, as, with a flourish, he spread the skirt of his akaton and robe and took a seat. The noble brought his steel-cloved hands together in a single metallic clap, then gestured with one of his hands to the pit below. Joseph hesitated for a moment, glaring at his oppressor, then risked a glance at the pit. It was a large, circular depression in the floor, some 20 feet deep, lined with steel spikes all about its upper lip. The base of the pit was covered in sand, the walls pitted with deep scratches and stains that were certainly that of spilled blood. Bones, cracked apart by some tremendous pressure, were scattered about in the sand. The unpleasant thought occurred to Joseph that they had been snapped to get at a soft marrow within. But the most terrible sight was the lone figure standing in the center of the pit, staring at the gloating minions of the Dark Elf Lord with eyes that were as filled with rage and fury as Joseph's own. Sir Lutriel had been stripped down to a loincloth, his back bearing the dark bruises of his treatment at the hands of the beastmen. The defiant Bretonian knight's gaze shifted to the massive wooden portcullis that dominated the far wall of the pit. A sound, like the shuffling of some enormous being, sounded from the darkness beyond the portal.
"I understood that I would be given a chance to display my swordsmanship,"
Sir Lutriel bellowed. His voice was calm and still carried a note of superiority and scorn. The Black Prince laughed and gestured to one of his human brigands. The grimy killer stepped to the rim of the pit. Laughing boisterously, the bandit tossed a long-bladed knife to the sandy floor below. Sir Lutriel bent down and retrieved the knife.
"Thank you for your graciousness," the knight said, bowing to the seated lord.
As he rose, Sir Lutriel's hand came upwards, hurling the blade at the Black Prince in a single blinding motion. The steel turned end over end, then was caught by an iron-clad grasp inches from the breastplate of the Dark Elf. The Black Prince handed the knife to Dranach without even glancing at it.
"You can hardly fault me for trying."
Sir Lutriel's voice rose from the floor of the pit. Another shuddering step, mixed with a low snarl, sounded from behind the gate. The knight turned to the portcullis.
"A pity,"
the Black Prince's musical voice purred.
"Now you shall have to face Marius without the benefit of that swordsmanship you were so boastful of."
The elf clapped his hands again, the sharp ring of metal upon metal echoing across the hall. A pair of human brigands at once leapt into motion, gripping a great wheel set into the wall. With quick wrenching movements, the two men turned the wheel. In the pit below, the wooden portcullis rose.